on campus
and online.
Check it out.
This is URN.
Hello and welcome to Femme Nottingham. Thank you very much for joining me here at 6 p.m. on URN. If you're thinking intersectionality, what's that? As I assume a lot of you are. It is a term that's been used since 1989. It was came up with by a professor called Crenshaw, and it basically, it's not just about feminism, it's about where one size does not fit all, and so it's talking about a lot of minority groups and how they overlap, for example being a black feminist or being a trans woman, and how being oppressed as a woman and then being oppressed as a transgender person, that multiplies, and actually you're much further down the ladder than you were if you were just trans or if you were just a woman. So that is the topic of conversation today, and why it's important, and why in 2018 we very much need it now. Intersectionality is all about diversity, essentially. It's all about how race, sexuality, body type comes into it, saying if you are a black or Hispanic woman, what does that mean for feminism and what's the relationship there? If you're a gay woman, you're then going to be looking at being a minority in both the gender community and in the sexuality community. And actually the fact that it multiplies rather than takes away from. Something that has been really criticised recently, and I can completely understand why, is middle-class white feminism. Now, it's very tricky as a middle-class white feminist to talk about this, because it's not my fault that I'm white, as it's not someone's fault if they're black. Therefore, I am a middle-class white feminist. That's unavoidable. However, the issue people are having is that because of that, women of colour, women who are gay, women who are disabled, are feeling ostracised by the white middle class feminism community. And they're saying actually feminism is being whitewashed at the moment, and it's being presented as this one size fits all, and it really isn't. It needs to be, actually, there needs to be ways in for black women, and there needs to be ways in for gay women. There's an overlapping minority status for all these women, and that is something that really needs to be discussed. The fact that a black woman has to navigate sexism and racism doesn't mean that in one case, if somebody is racist towards her, that doesn't remove the fact that she's a woman. Actually, it multiplies that issue, because generally people become sexist and racist at the same time. And so that is an issue that women would have to deal with much more than I would, say. An example of this is from a feminist thinker called Ava Vidal. And so she said, and I quote, "As a black feminist, she does not necessarily condone Chris Brown physically assaulting his then-girlfriend Rihanna. However, she will object to when a white woman called him a black bleep swear word fill in the blank. She's not therefore condoning the domestic abuse against Rihanna, but she's condoning the racism." And actually it's saying that that is being overlapped, and just because the woman is a feminist, and actually she's saying, the white woman would argue, she is saying that from a feminist perspective, that he domestically abused his girlfriend, and that's not on. However, using the racist terminology therefore makes it an intersectionality issue. This is something that women on campus here have to deal with on a regular basis. This is something that women across the world have to deal with, and it's only just being talked about now, despite the fact that the term is around 20, 30 years old. It's saying that everybody has different experiences of feminism, and actually that's okay. Women in general will have different experiences to men. This is an argument that I would put forward as a feminist. This is an argument that was put forward with the tampon tax. So, as I'm sure most of you will know, the tampon tax was instated last year by a cabinet of mainly men. The majority of them were men. Therefore, a lot of feminists were criticising the fact that men didn't have this experience of having to buy tampons. They never got periods. They can sympathise having had partners, sisters, mothers that had periods, but they themselves have not had this experience, and therefore they cannot instate laws fully knowing what the experience is. Most feminists accept that this is the case. A man, however understanding he can be, cannot fully understand a woman's perspective, cannot fully understand a woman's struggle, because they have not been a woman. This is exactly the same argument with intersectionality. A white woman, I cannot fully understand and fully talk on the behalf of a black woman, because I will never be able to experience what she has in life. And therefore that's why intersectionality is so important, because if you don't fight for all women, you're fighting for no women. If you purely fight for a small part of the community of women, you're therefore excluding so much more. And that has been a criticism of white feminism in the past few years. They're saying, a feminist writer released a book a few years back, and she said that white Western feminists are taking after their brothers and fathers, in the sense that they're being very exclusive. It's exclusive feminism. If you're white and middle class, you can experience this and you can become a feminist. However, if you're black or if you're gay or if you're disabled, that box doesn't fill, and therefore you're being excluded, and that's not on, and that's what intersectionality is looking to tackle. An argument recently is that feminism 2018 has stagnated. I told this story last week, the girl on the bus who said to me, I don't really see why we need feminism anymore. I don't understand what the necessity is. And last week we discussed that, particularly in film, it's very much needed. We're not there yet, and that's okay. There is still many steps to be taken before we reach gender parity. It's simply naive to suggest that we're anywhere near that at this point. This is exactly the same with intersectionality. Currently, feminism is very fragmented. It's fragmented into sections of, say, white women, black women, gay women, trans women. And what we need to do is really split it. A phrase that came out of this movement is something called check your privilege. Hashtag check your privilege was used all over Twitter. And it was mainly white women who turned around and said, we're speaking on behalf of all women. And particularly black and Hispanic women turned around and said, actually, no, you can't speak on my behalf because you don't know my experience. You weren't there. You haven't been... nobody has been racist and sexist to you at the same time. You're never going to experience that. And that's a very valid point. Just as I said, men don't know what it's like to be a woman. A white woman doesn't know what it's like to be a black woman. And that is simply a fact that we need to tackle with 2018 and onwards feminism. Mainstream feminism is something that is very much in the news recently, as with women in film, talking about the Me Too movement. And very recently, I assume most of you, particularly as you're listening to this lovely feminist show, would have been aware of the Women's March that happened late in 2017, and there were some early 2018, mainly triggered by Trump's election. But there was definitely a culture and a feeling that this needed to be discussed. A criticism from many BME groups and many LGBT groups was that this was very much a whitewash event, not through any of the women's fault. This is something that really needs to be discussed here, in the fact that the women that are marching, and the fact that it's mostly white women, generally 99% of the times these white women are not looking to exclude black, gay or disabled women. That's not the case. However, the route in for those minority groups of women is more of a struggle, because what they're seeing is a lot of white privileged women marching and saying, well, I've got so many more issues than that. I don't think I can get involved. That's not what I look like. That's not my issues. I think that's really interesting, in the sense that we should all be intersectional feminists. That's my point of view, unsurprisingly, as I'm hosting the show. Intersectional feminism is so important, and I'll reiterate again, if we don't fight for all women, you fight for no women. It's the same argument. It's just a nuanced argument of women having the vote. It's a nuanced argument of women having equal opportunities to men. Black women should have equal opportunities to white women. And this runs in parallel to issues of race, issues of sexuality. But it is something specific to feminism, as we're talking about it in this show. This is the front runner of what we're calling fourth wave feminism. So up until about 2012, it's widely accepted that that was the end of third wave feminism. Sorry. And intersectionality, and actually the implementation of intersectionality, is what people are coining fourth wave. it's very, very tricky to actually put waves into books. The first wave was, as I'm sure a lot of you'll know, women's right to getting suffrage and actually just getting the right to vote. Second wave was more a civil rights issue in terms of all of the other legislation coming on from just not just the vote. It paralleled the civil rights movement. Third wave was end of 20th century into the 21st century, discussing things like rights in the workplace. Equal pay was discussed. The start of intersectionality was talked about, but it wasn't really in place at that point. And now fourth wave is talking about how minority groups really need to be discussed in feminism and how it's really important. I want to talk about Halsey. So this is something that came out of the woodwork about a week or two ago, so it's very contemporary. Halsey, you may know her as, first off, banging music. She, as we'll play in a bit, Chainsmokers with Closer. She's just released a track with G-Eazy called Him and I, and essentially brilliant female artist around at the moment producing music. She posted something on Twitter that got a lot of attention, and it got a backlash, but it also got a lot of support. It was about shampoo. Now, I hear you. I also, when I heard this, didn't think, well, what can the issue be with shampoo? And I very naively did not realise that Halsey was mixed race. This is something I discovered via this. And this is part of the issue. So Halsey has a black father and a white mother. Now, what she says in subsequent tweets is that she is white passing. This means that, like myself, many people don't realise that Halsey is a woman of colour. People don't realise this because she has very, very light skin. And it was purely how genes are mixed that she can pass as a white woman. And so this is a really interesting example of intersectionality, because people treat her as if she is a white woman, despite the fact that she is a woman of colour. This is where this tweet came out. So she has, as she described herself, African-American-esque hair. And she said, I'm going to remove swear words. She was clearly very upset about it at the time. She was traveling around hotels, and she said, to paraphrase, that the shampoo, shampoo and conditioner that is in hotel bathrooms is watered down, and this white people, and I quote, hair products I can't use for my hair. So, just an observation, it was something that she was upset about because it was late at night, she wanted to wash her hair before a gig, and she couldn't because her hair wasn't compatible with the quote-unquote white people products. This, a massive debate, as normally happens on Twitter, as I'm sure you're all aware. People had different sides and different opinions. Most people turned around and went, I don't really know how you have a foot to stand on here. How dare you speak on behalf of black women when you are not? And she turned around and said, actually, I think you'll find I have a black father and a black mother. And this is where people can trip up with intersectionality, because if... it's almost as if I was saying this, and I am a completely 100% Caucasian, but people were saying, actually, you can't say that, Halsey, you're not black. And she said, actually, I do have, my father is black, so I therefore very definitely can say this, and I have African American hair. And this started a new debate of actually the shampoo, and how people were going, yeah, but is it that much of an issue? Surely we should be talking about larger issues of police violence and pay gap, that kind of thing. And Halsey fired back on Twitter and said, actually, no, this is a perfect example of how black and minority ethnic women, specifically, are ostracised and moved out of a... And people saying, actually, no, it's just the cheapest product. It's not the fact they're trying to make quote-unquote white people products. It's the fact they're trying to make products in general. And she said, no, it's a perfect example of minority groups being pushed aside and not having an option for them. In terms of feminism, this is really interesting, because she turned around and essentially said, I have every right as a woman of colour to say this. And it was predominantly a racial issue. But the thing that applies here is the fact that it was very much about intersectionality, because people fired back and said, you can say this because you're a woman, you can't say this because you're not black. And then this whole debate came about. And this was another thing that she said. So, she's white passing. However, I will put a slight warning out for graphic content here. She has, as she said, she has brown nipples. And she has had a man say, and she tweeted this out the other week, boys are always confused about why I have, quote-unquote, a black girl's nipples. And she goes, that's because I am a black girl. And she identifies herself as a black girl. And so this is a perfect example of a woman being not only oppressed and not only pushed aside with her views because she is female, but being pushed aside because she is part of the African American community. And I think this is where it really comes down to respect, and actually respecting that, yes, she does have a right to talk about this because she does have that background and she does have that experience. But she was also saying, I also sometimes feel a little bit of a fraud. But because she's white passing, people treat her as a white woman. People don't treat her as a black woman, and are then surprised when they find out. Ashamedly, as much as I was when I found out that she had a black father. And this is really interesting because she said she's gone through life being treated as a white woman, and she has come out and said, I actually think I have been given more opportunities because people think I'm white than if I had been very obviously mixed race. And she said, at no point have I hidden the fact that I have mixed blood. At no point have I hidden that, she said. However, people assume, and she said, the fact that people are assuming that I'm white, she suspects, does mean that she's got further in her career, and she felt very torn by that. That's a very interesting discussion to have in terms of mixing with the two groups. The thing that isn't being accepted, and the thing that isn't being discussed, and it needs to be in terms of intersectionality, is the fact that black women, Hispanic women specifically, gay women have this to a lesser extent, but very, very much so, ethnic minority groups in general have a pay gap. They are as shocking, if not more shocking, than the gender pay gap currently. Therefore, very logically, if you follow this through, I have very rudimentary math skills. I scraped a B at GCSE and I've barely touched it since, other than to work out how to pay a bill. Now, even I can work out that if you're a woman and you are paid less than a man, and if you are therefore African American or Hispanic or any other ethnic groups, and the statistics say you are paid less than a Caucasian person, you are going to be paid on average less in both counts. Therefore, it will multiply the pay gap. The pay gap will be exasperated and it will be brought to a much higher level. Intersectionality has to be discussed. The statistics are there. It's impossible to ignore from my perspective. It has to be accepted that as a woman, you're going to have a different experience to a man. I cannot tell you, sitting here, I don't know what it's like to have a penis. I don't. This is accepted, and I'm pretty sure most people would turn around and go, yeah, no, you don't know what it's like, and that's fine. But also, I can't sit here as a white feminist, as a white woman, and know what it's like to be black, because I don't. And that is exactly the core of intersectionality. If it's accepted that I don't know what it's like to be a man, and a man doesn't exactly know my experience, I can sympathise, but I can't say what it's like to be that. And so we have to listen to BME women, we have to listen to the LGBT community, and we have to listen to disabled activism groups, and actually say, yeah, they do have a different experience, and that's okay, and bring them into the realm of feminism, rather than having this core group led by white middle-class women. So thank you very, very much for joining me on Monday evening. Have a wonderful evening.